Well, good evening and welcome, friends, fans, and colleagues, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. It's Wednesday, so it must be VSF Day. Thank you to my regular listeners, and welcome to the new folks that we have calling in each week. And just a shout out to the band Zingaya, whose music we were listening to open the show. That is one of my favorite cuts of theirs. They're a group out of Las Vegas, and that was called Breath of Passion. There's just something about that melody that just speaks to me on a soul level, and after I hear it, it just, I don't know, I want to take a deep breath and just sink into the music. I sort of can imagine me riding the back of a camel, loping across the desert with the music in the background. Oh, well. So let me pull myself together here and return from the desert and focus on tonight's show, which I think is an exceptional one. You know, I don't often interview authors about books of fiction unless they're exceptional. And tonight's author and books or absolutely exceptional. Tonight I have with me Barbara Han Clow. She had written a lot of nonfiction books, and she has turned her attention to some fiction books, Revelations of the Ruby Crystal and the highly anticipated sequel, Revelations of the Aquarian Age. And if you don't know Barbara, she's a noted ceremonialist and author, and through the lens of these two new fiction books, she's going to discuss with me not just the interesting and provocative plot lines of these two books, which span centuries, but we'll delve into the subtext, which is part of the reason I thought this would make an interesting show, because it takes us places like if Barbara thinks we're witnessing the end of organized religion, if the return of goddess is actually happening. Of course, there's the issue of the need to heal scars of abuse. If we could achieve world peace if the truth about the past were known. Now that's an interesting one. We're going to have a discussion about if the big three religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, if they'd ever come clean about the real truth of history, instead of standing by the history, you know, that organized religion has written. So let me say welcome to Barbara. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to Voices of the Sacred Feminine.
Hi, Karen. Nice
and to you. Thank you for being with me tonight. And I do want to mention some of your other books as well. You are a Mayan calendar researcher, and you've written the Mayan Code. And your other books include the Pleiadian Agenda, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, Awakening the Planetary Mind. You've taught at sacred sites, and but now you've turned your attention to fiction. I wonder what inspired you to make the shift.
Well, what happened, Karen? As you can see, I've written books in many, many fields, and mm-hmm. the most original. A lot of my books are actually research books on something like, say, the Mayan calendar. But the most original part of my work is the Pleiadian Agenda, and then a scientific analysis of the Pleiadian Agenda, which is called Alchemy of Nine Dimensions. And this is a really, truly multidimensional creation. And I finally reached the point where I needed the artistic quality of fiction. I actually needed to have a series of characters, and actually two generations of characters, parents and then grown children, because in order to get into that multidimensional level, I really needed a much greater reach, which fiction can offer a person, a writer,
mm-hmm.
As long as you could create great characters. And so the goal was to create
great
characters who are doing what I've done in all of my other areas of research my whole life.
Right. Well, and I would imagine it that sort of challenged you in a different way, maybe in a way that it maybe sparked something in you that had been dormant. You wanted to just sort of delve into more creativity than, like you said, these other books were almost, they were research-oriented books. Not that you don't do research for a fiction book. Of course, you have to, but it's different. With a fiction book, you can let your creative juices flow. You can, take some, creative license that you can't when you're writing those other type books.
Yeah, that's true. And then I especially needed the creative license because this is actually a trilogy and the first two books are in and then I'm writing the third one at this time. And my goal was to cover the time period from 2011 through 2020. I've also written a couple of astrology books and I'm an astrologer. And, excuse me, with deep analysis, what I wanted to do was call the point in time when the transition actually would occur. And I decided it would be 2011 through 2020. So I started the first book in 2011. And boy, has that analysis turned out to be prophetic in terms of the actual shift into Aquarius. Because when we go out of one age, which is the age of Pisces, and we move into the next age, the age of Aquarius, there's always a tremendous amount of chaos and shredding of reality when that transition occurs. And that's exactly what's going on. So I'm attempting to track that. And then I needed to have a selection of details because there's a billion things that are going on. But I needed to pick the things out of the changes that are going on that are going to end up being really significant, such as the end of the, not total end of organized religion, just that organized religion will not be the ruling factor on the planet. And so I needed that creativity of fiction to be able to select the correct details and then to have the characters actually experience the changes because all of us are going through so much right now, and I'm hoping that my characters will be will help the readers actually deal with the changes better just by following their lives.
Okay, well, I have a feeling we're going to be flipping back and forth between books and between the plot lines versus, shall we call it your academic or scientific research. So to speak, if you don't mind, speak a little bit more about that, about the changes that you predicted and you saw, and I'd be remiss to ask, so what do you think is next?
Oh, what do I think is next? Actually, I think we're very much on the verge of a disclosure about extraterrestrial influence on this planet. I think that Trump is exactly the kind of president where something like this could actually occur. And so 2 days ago, we hear they're creating a new space agency. And that's very
mm-hmm.
peculiar, And so that's what I'm going to be talking about that quite a bit because I've also had a fair amount of extraterrestrial contact myself. But I'd like to say one thing about the books. The books have a lot of content in the background. For example, the first one, Ruby Crystal, the background theme is priestly sexual abuse. And that turned out to be very prophetic because now we have the Me Too movement and now we have a tremendous movement toward solving problems that are being caused by abuse. And then the second novel, the theme has more to do with the breakthrough from an artistic level of the changes. This comes through a painter in the book. And so I don't know exactly what I want to say about that, but what I would like to say is that this is what we call content fiction, like Dan Brown, for example. And in the 19th century, some of our favorite writers really traced like Anthony Trollope or Jane Eyre or whatever, they really traced the background changes in society while their characters lived out their lives. And I think this is one of the great values of fiction. Like if you think of a historical period, like a period, you know, maybe say during the time of Henry VIII or something like that, you never can remember mm-hmm. all the stuff about all these kings. But when you read a fictional novel about their lives, what happens is you remember the background historical information. So I think we need our writers to teach us in that way, and that's certainly one of my goals.
Right. Well, with Revelations of the Aquarian Age, the one that just came out, the second one, and you said you're writing the third, so there's going to be a trilogy, a lot of the plot line involved Jesus and Mary Magdalene, which is a, you know, provocative subject. I mean, I know we were talking about that in the 90s. I mean, that was like a sizzling topic. And I mean, I just love the fact that Mary Magdalene has been totally rehabilitated. You know, I don't know anybody in the circles that I have contact in that even think of Mary Magdalene in terms of, you know, how we did maybe 20 or 30 years ago as the repentant prostitute. You know, now she is, you know, been totally rehabilitated, and she has a new persona as the divine feminine. She's part of the sacred couple, Jesus's wife. And in this book, too, you get into, you know, their relationship, sacred sexuality. You know, I wonder if there was a reason why, you know, how does that tie into what you see happening out in the world today? You know, the stuff that was prophetic, if you will.
Yeah, well, you put that really well, because the facts are we think of Jesus and Mary Magdalene completely differently than we did 20 years ago. And this goes back to Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and the different books that have come forth, and I'm sure you also read. And so the people at this point think differently, but the religions are not changing their stance. And this mm-hmm. is very, very important. And this is one of the reasons, one of the things I did in Revelations of the Aquarian Age is I covered the issue of the discovery of the Jesus family tomb, the Talpiot tomb in Jerusalem, because we are living in a world right now where it's very, very highly likely, if not already proven, that we've discovered the tomb where Jesus and his family were buried. And yet this is deeply hidden by the people in Jerusalem, Jewish archaeologists, archaeological system, and then certainly by fundamentalist Christianity, because they don't want it to come out. Well, first of all, Catholicism doesn't want the real story, because then what are you going to do with the celibate priesthood that has been mm-hmm. abusing children? And then the fundamentalist Christians don't want this, because they just have a very, very kind of simplistic attitude toward Jesus. They basically buy the Bible story. And so even though
right.
you and I, many, many people that you know, see it differently, the religions don't. And so one of the things mm-hmm. I'm working on, that's kind of the second book, and of course now I'm working on the third book. And what I feel, or what I really think is going on, is that when this particular part of the story, the issue of Jesus being buried in heaven and family, finally becomes accepted by the religions, which I think this is going to happen, because I think it's going to have to happen, then the interesting thing is that in the third book, I can see the resolution between Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, because we've had basically 2,000 years of wars for God, and we can't do this anymore. The planet cannot take this level of aggression and destruction of planetary resources for warfare. And so what I'm looking for as we go into the age of Aquarius is the resolution between these three religions.
I hope you're right.
Abraham. They all come from
right,
the same
right.
Great, great father. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and believe me, Barbara, I think you're right. But let me just ask you a couple questions and throw in a few comments. Now, the Talpiot tomb, was that when everything was in the news about the when they found the ossuary boxes and they had the inscriptions of Jesus's brother James? Was that the tomb?
That's right.
Is that the Talpiot
right.
tomb? So speak to that a little bit. When was that exactly? Because I can't pull that out of my
right,
brain.
Right, and you can't put it back in your head.
But they didn't find the. But they didn't find the bones of Jesus, though, right? They think they found the bones of his brother, or might have that wrong. So you correct me.
Yeah. Yeah, what you're thinking of is when they found the James's tomb, ossuary, the brother of Jesus, that was separated. It disappeared when the Talpiot tomb was excavated in 1980, and it showed up in the antiquities market. And a lot of people have heard about this because it was on display in Toronto in 2003. And then the other thing people have heard about is James Cameron, the director of Avatar, did a film called The Jesus Family Tomb with a couple of filmmakers. And so people have also heard about that. That was 2007. But the cover-up on this is just absolutely unbelievable because there's a tremendous amount of scientific testing of the tomb regarding soil testing and some DNA testing on remains. But the bones they do not have, because what the Israeli antiquities authorities always do is whenever they find an ossuary, they have a collective place where they dump all the bones, and then they put the ossuaries in a warehouse. And it's too bad that they do that, but that's what they do. So we don't have that.
So, and there's a problem in a sense too, because that would destroy the whole premise of Christianity about Jesus being divine and rising to heaven and all of that. The resurrection. We couldn't, we couldn't destroy that resurrection myth. It would just the house of cards that is Christianity would come crashing down. But explain to me, though, what was so earth-shattering about that discovery?
Well, first of all, you have to admit, historically, if it really is the tomb of the family, that's mind-boggling in itself. But then it becomes even more shattering when you consider the issue of resurrection, because Christianity mm-hmm. is based on resurrection, and is Islam. I mean, Islam's a little bit of a different take on it. But the interesting thing about that, Karen, is that something else was going on regarding resurrection, which has to do with the issue of a very, very ancient technique of raising people's consciousness by doing a raising. And this means a raising is when a person feels like they've encountered the end and death, and it's a technique that you can create with people. And then their consciousness explodes because they go into the non-physical realms and they go into very major states of high consciousness. So what's kind of hidden by the resurrection is the fact that all of us have the capacity to reach these very, very high levels of consciousness by initiation. And that's more the subject of the third book. The interesting thing about fiction is you have to live with these characters kind of going along. And one of the mm-hmm. major characters of the book, of course, is Armando Pierleone, the painter. And he is an really interesting character because he's going through levels of his consciousness is becoming more highly developed all the way through the trilogy, where he starts out in the first book as a really bad guy, a real major abuser. And then he goes through changes in his own life and then finally starts to transform himself and then eventually goes to a really high level. So the twist here is that some of these Christian dogma concepts, such as resurrection, keep us away from a whole lot of things that we're actually capable of. And that is one of the central issues of the Age of Aquarius, is the ability of
right.
the individual, to attain higher states of consciousness, that we don't have to have priests and religions to tell us how to do any of this anymore.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the heretical Gnosticism, so to speak, that would enable you to be, to touch God, so to speak.
This is very astute on your part, because the trilogy is very fundamentally Gnostic, because I think that was the high point in religion 2,000 years ago that got put on the shelf while dogmatic Christianity was developed. And the Gnostics actually really believed in the importance of the change of the ages. They believed, and actually the Gnostics have records before the Alexandrian Library was burned, that actually go back 10,000 years. They actually go back through five or six great ages, because we get a new age every 2,000 years. And so this trilogy is actually a real teaching from a Gnostic point of view of how to let go of the old levels and how to bring in the new. Because if you don't do it right, you end up with a lot of the bad elements continuing through time instead of transforming. And the best example of that is that the age of Aries is before the age of Pisces. The age of Aries is like 2000 BC to right around zero. And that was the age that developed organized warfare. We don't have any evidence in the earlier ages anywhere on the planet of organized warfare. We have people camp robbing and knocking people's heads off. That sort of stuff is always going on. But the actual devotion of a culture to warfare is a new thing during the age of Aries. And then it should have been transformed during the age of Pisces. The age of Pisces is meant to be a very spiritual phase of time. But what happened is the warfare didn't get dropped, and so then we have wars for God, which have been so devastating to all of us in our lifetime.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I wonder, I don't mean to jump around too much here, because I still want to get back to the idea of can these religions rewrite their history and maybe come clean about what's the real truth, if they even know, you know, if they haven't lost it by now that they've hidden it so long. But I'm thinking about how the evangelicals in the United States are the ones that put Trump in power and keep Trump in power, and they're so anti-Jesus, or should I say anti-Jesus's teachings, at least what I think Jesus taught. And I wonder if you feel that that's significant, how that plays into, these ages that are coming and going. I mean, because it feels like you can lay an awful lot of evil at the feet of these organized religions.
Yes, again, very astute on your part, because we can really think of the age of Aries, 2000 BC to 0 AD, as like the age of Yahweh. And Yahweh, Jehovah, was a god of law, and he was a very violent, abusive god. I mean, it's just the truth. All you have to do is read the Old Testament. And then when Jesus came along, Jesus taught that the way that we needed to move into was to move into understanding that God is a god of love. And that is what was supposed to happen during the age of Pisces. But the religions held on so tightly. For example, in Ruby Crystal, the first book of the three, the issue in that book is the issue of a theologian named Marcion, who was the one who objected. He was actually a very big fish. Are we stopping?
I'm going to turn that off, and I apologize.
I know, I thought it was the signal that we're coming up to a commercial, so I'm watching.
No.
That. Okay, but back to Marcion, if you go back to 100 to 200 AD, early Christianity, Marcion's church was bigger than the Church of Peter in Rome. And then there was a big battle over who was going to have the line from Christ and have the bishops and all that. And they excommunicated Marcion. And Marcion's key central teaching was that the Old Testament should not be attached to the New Testament. It's not that the Old Testament isn't valuable, and it's not that it's not great scripture. But Marcion believed that in order to bring in the God of love and the God of compassion, Christianity had to have its own scripture. And so that the first book here in this trilogy is actually working on that issue. And then as we go into the second book, the issue starts to transform more so in terms of what's actually going on with the religions. And I'd like to go back to the way you started this comment, which is to say that, speaking of you saying that almost everybody you know thinks about Jesus and Mary Magdalene very differently. Well, almost everybody's starting to think about almost every aspect of religion. Let's take Roman Catholicism. And who believes you shouldn't use birth control? And who believes that you shouldn't have a female priest if you want to, you know? And so this is what happens when an age changes. is the people get way, way out of whack with the conventional systems that are functioning. And so that's what we see going on right now. We see a guy like Trump coming along who's just tearing everything apart. In fact, he reminds me of St. Paul in a way. If you go back 2,000 years ago, that's what St. Paul did with Judaic Christianity. He just tore it to shreds. Get rid of circumcision. Get rid of dietary. And that is what we're... It isn't that I'm saying Trump is St. Paul. In no way am I saying that. But he's playing that role of throwing a whole bunch of stuff out. But that's the point in the transition that's so difficult. Because we all have attachments and needs connected to the various structures that we're dealing with in our lives.
Well, and I mean, I'm thinking, you know, these evangelical Christians... well, you know, I can't even imagine being in their head. You know, it's hard to comprehend. I mean, they must feel like there's a ping pong ball bouncing around, because on the one hand, and, you know, and maybe this is just because I don't know enough about what they believe in their scripture, but I can't fathom how they can embrace a person like Trump. I mean, he's the antithesis of what religion and spirituality is supposed to be about. I mean, there's such hypocrisy, and I mean, and you read every day how, you know, people are leaving organized religion. You know, they're leaving Christianity, especially. You know, I mean, it's toxic, and it's amazing to me that. How do I even language it? I mean, I guess it's just amazing to me that the lowest common denominator, the least evolved among us, are the ones that seem to be wielding the power. You know, some people say, well, it's the last gasps of the patriarchy, you know, and we could expect that it was going to be like this before we transition into, you know, a realm where, or a time when, you know, we have higher awareness among the masses. I don't know, do you think that's what's going on? Or, I mean, when you look out there, where does it fit into this idea you have of, you know, how things are evolving in the ages?
Well, I definitely think this is the demise of the patriarchy, and we can see it everywhere left and right, but of course it's not going to fall easily. And if we go through the various great ages, if we go back a little bit further, they go in reverse, which is always very confusing for people. But if you go back through the age of Aries, and then if you go back to the age of Taurus, which is like 4,000 BC to 2,000 BC, we have the age of the goddess. And then before Taurus, we have the age of Gemini, which is like 6,000 to 4,000 BC. And the age of Gemini was an age of enlightenment. And the air sign ages, Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius, tend to be the great age where a whole slew of really bad stuff that's developed just finally just gets rejected and more enlightened ideas come in. And so I think, like, for example, I'm seeing in my lifetime, from an anthropological point of view, I'm seeing the most profound change that I think people have seen in thousands of years, which is fathers caring for their infants and small children. Now, I raised four children, and I'm 75 at this point, so I'm definitely the older generation. And even though my husband, and I'm still with the same husband, was a very enlightened individual, he just didn't do that. Nobody did that. And now everywhere I look, it's just, I love it. Everywhere you go, the men are taking care of the children, they're taking care of the babies, they're holding the infants so tenderly. This is a huge anthropological shift. And it's one of the things that will break down the patriarchy, because the generation coming up and the generation below them, they don't want to do things that way anymore. They don't want to be an abusive man. They don't want to be a Harvey Weinstein. So it's believe it or not, it's actually going away, because it can't function anymore once people see what's really going on. Once people realize what a guy like Harvey Weinstein does or what a guy like Trump does, they're going to go away. They're dinosaurs, would be a good way to put it.
Well, I hope you're right. And I mean, and I've been thinking that maybe the millennials were, you know, going to step in and be a big shift. You know, I've thought that ever since I saw they had the sense to back Bernie Sanders, you know. And just, you know, they're not anti-gay, you know, they don't seem to be sexist. They're just they just have a different mindset. They seem more inclusive, and they don't have all these phobias and isms that, you know, the older generations have. So maybe that's part of it. What you just described, I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. I guess living it day to day, it's difficult because it seems like we're not making any progress. But we have to remember this is just a little blip on the, you know, on the timeline of history. You know, 10 or 20 years is nothing. In maybe 10 or 20 years from now, this, you know, this nightmare that we're living in right now will be history.
You've heard the saying that that people are going to suffer if they're born during difficult times. I forget exactly how that expression goes. Yeah, it's an old saying that's been around forever. You kind of like beware of living during difficult times. Well, this is actually an expression that comes from the shift of the ages. Because another thing I did in the first novel, Ruby Crystal, is I explored the transition from the age of Aries into Pisces, the previous one, fairly carefully so that you can see more easily what's actually going on now. And the way you're expressing it, Karen, is exactly how it feels. I mean, that's why I decided to write this. In terms of my own background, I was an astrologer, and I've been a healer and a spiritual teacher. And I still am, of course. And I'm writing this just to help people at this point. And it could be that the readers are going to primarily be people who are 50 and older, although I've tended all the way through my writing career to have a span of ages with the readers. But one thing I do know is for the people of my generation, which is basically the boomers, we have had a tremendous amount of emotional baggage because we were coming out of the Victorian era and we were coming out of an era of secrecy. And even if really bad things happened to you or to people you knew, you couldn't talk about it. And so now to have I wrote about sexual abuse back in the 1980s and practically had tomatoes being thrown at me when I went out to do book signing because I'm very, very blunt. You know, I tell the truth. But now, look what's happening. We are really making progress. And these are the fundamental issues. You know, ultimately, it's the relationships between men and women and families and communities that matter. You know, this ridiculous roadshow going on in Washington. From one point of view, it doesn't matter as much as our personal transformation is concerned, you know. And then, we're in the middle of a huge drama of legal issues with the American government, which is very, very meaningful. It's almost like sometimes I feel like I'm back in Athens in 500 BC watching Greek drama. You know, it's really incredible what's going on, but a lot.
Or the fall of, or the fall of Rome.
Definitely
well,
like the fall of Rome. Yeah.
Even though it looks ugly, you know, it's kind of like that expression, you know, nobody likes to see sausages being made. You know, even though it's hard to take, I think the fact that we have so much transparency and we're seeing so much ugliness, whether it be Congress or Trump or people are looking at, you know, the role the United States plays as the bully in chief, you know, the dominator country, you know, with all the bullets and bombs and how they've, you know, messed with the politics and business in other countries, or you know, we look back at our own history and we see the genocide, you know, that we felt was you know, our right to perpetuate on Native Americans. I mean, there's so much, so much. I mean, we could talk an hour about the atrocities, you know, committed by, you know, our government, you know, since the beginning. But I feel like while it's hard to take, it's almost like maybe in a way the transparency is cleansing, you know, if that makes any sense, you know, because you can't fix anything if it's hidden, if you can't talk about it, if it's spoken about in whispers. But if, you know, these atrocities, whatever they are, you know, fascism, racism, the abuse women suffered, and now we have the Me Too movement. You know, it's like the transparencies of all of these things, as hard as it is and painful as it is to live through it, to hear it, to see it, it really gives us the opportunity, I think, to step up and fix it. And, you know, maybe I'm too much of an idealist still, but I can't help but think maybe that's what's going to happen next, you know, that we'll wallow in it for a while, and it'll just become so egregious that, you know, that we somehow figure out a way to make change, you know, that we'll take back our government, we'll, you know, care, you know, there'll be, you know, equality and, you know, fairness between the sexes. You know, it'll be about the common good again instead of the oligarchy. I don't know. You know, maybe this is all pie in the sky, but I would like to think that everything that's being revealed to us has a purpose, and the purpose will ultimately lead us to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and transparency really is the key, because right now what has happened through this, at the end of the age, it's always this way where these gigantic control dynamics have been building. And, of course, central through the three books is the Vatican. And people might think, well, why are you bothering with the Vatican? Well, the Vatican is sitting front and center in the middle of the control of the banking system, and it's a global religion which has been developed in order to control the planet globally. And so the problem with these gigantic organizations like corporations, Big Pharma, the Vatican, they can't function if people know what they're doing. And so the key to all of it is for each one of us as an individual to make that commitment to really figuring out what's really going on. And it's not a waste of time. This is like a group movement. This is like a group cultural movement. Because, for example, take Big Pharma and take the drugging. And my generation, the boomers, have just been drugged beyond, you know, comprehension, to the point where they're like the Night of the Living Dead. Did you ever see that film? That was a film in the 50s. Yeah, you remember that? That was a really great film.
Yeah.
And I think it was a prediction of what would happen with allopathic medicine, with Big Pharma. And so people have to, like, take responsibility for their own health. You know, like, one of the things I've done in my lifetime is I've channeled the Pleiadians, and I wrote a book called The Pleiadian Agenda. Came out in 1995, and the Pleiadians just laugh at humans and say, you don't have to swallow a pill, you don't have to do those things, and so that's, we're having this, and I'm with you, by the way, speaking of being an optimist, I'm actually very optimistic and also in great pain right now, because this is really, we're really at the nexus point of how tough this is, and the chaos is going to accelerate still further. You know, we have a person in the White House who just simply is orchestrating reality by creating chaos. Meanwhile, migrant children were thrown into dog pens for, you know, 6 weeks, and systems are being created, you know, all that stuff. And so we, as each individual, we have such an obligation now to see the truth. And I've been out teaching for about 45, 50 years now, and I see tremendous growth in students over my teaching career. The number of people at this point who really have figured out a lot of the segments of this game is really huge at this point. And so it's going to change, and the correct word is definitely transparency. We just have to keep pushing for transparency.
Well, and, you know, it's sort of, we've been talking about that 100th monkey idea, you know. And you know, and I've been thinking a lot about the fake news thing, you know. Granted, there's an awful lot of fake news out there. And it's a, I guess it's a double-edged sword when you lose, you know, when you lose faith in institution. I mean, I think we have to lose faith in some institutions because some of the institutions don't serve us. I mean, and obviously the corporate media doesn't really, you know, cover the things that benefit the 99%, you know. You know, they I think they're geared toward, you know, benefiting, you know, the 1%. But by the same token, you know, you look at, like, say, Fox News, for instance. You know, I think historians will look back over this time period and the influence that Fox News has had on Americans, and they will say that Fox News, which I feel like is the propaganda arm of the GOP, I think they will speak to just the egregious negative influence they have been on the psyches of American people. So maybe, you know, the people that, you know, just sort of write off the media in general, maybe to a certain extent it's not all bad, you know, if a lot of them might also be writing off Fox News. I mean, because I know people who don't watch, you know, I mean, because I think it's on both sides. I mean, I think the right doesn't believe the media, and I don't think the left believes the media anymore either. I mean, and it's hard to know who to believe, that's for sure. But it's almost as if these, maybe some of these institutions have to fail and be rebuilt from the ground up because they're so rotten and corrupt.
I think it's a combination of some institutions needing to fail totally and then other institutions transforming, keeping some elements and then transforming into other levels.
Yeah. Well, you know, you spoke to Trump's comments about creating another arm of the military that would be for space. And, you know, the moment I heard that, I immediately thought exactly what you just said, that it had something to do with the government finally coming forward and admitting that there were ETs and what they've been doing behind the scenes, you know, since Roswell and all, you know, since then. And I could see Trump, you know, being the one that would just tweet it out one day, you know, and just kind of let the pieces fall where they may, like he does with everything else. And so I wonder if you want to speak to that a little bit, and because I'm also curious about the experience you said you had. You know, you kind of dropped that in earlier, and I don't want to get too far away from your books, but, you know, I think my listeners would you know, hang me if I don't ask you about that.
Well, and also the characters in the book are informed about different levels of my own research. And I don't have them say, like, oh, I read this book by Barbara Ann Cloud. There's none of that going on. But fundamentally, I'm working with nine dimensions of consciousness in the Pleiadian Agenda and Alchemy of Nine Dimensions. This work goes back to the mid-90s, so this has been out for a long time, and I've been teaching it a long time. And basically, it's a consciousness model that exactly worked exactly with superstring theory. And superstring theory is an extremely important discovery during our times. Like, if you think of, if you go back to quantum mechanics, which is about 110, 120 years ago, all of the devices and all the iPads and iPhones and everything are all coming from quantum mechanics. And then, since then, superstring theory was discovered in 1995. It was first discovered scientifically. And we're going to have a whole new level of science coming forth based on superstring theory. And the latest news on that one is that scientists have now mapped the architecture of the human brain. This is 2015. And this project, excuse me, is called the Blue Brain Project. And we've discovered that our minds actually function in 9 to 11 dimensions. They've actually been able to get geometrical images of the different dimensions. And so the reason the disclosure issue is really important, and you did that really well, speaking of Roswell and the issue of what's been going on with government secrecy, and the danger that we're going to face as we become aware that we're in touch with other realities and other beings and other dimensions is that the powers that be, the controllers, are going to try to reduce that experience to only the third and the fourth dimension. The third dimension is where we are right now, linear space and time. The fourth dimension is the collective mind. And the fourth, this is, by the way, the system is different than Einstein because it's a consciousness model. And there are actually nine dimensions. I'm only doing the third and the fourth. But the fourth dimension is the collective mind that functions by duality, dark and light, black and white, and it's very polarized. And what happens with our media and with our scientific system is that people's minds are constantly pulled into the fourth dimension. And that's one of the reasons we're having a struggle right now, because we're starting to see the truth of the way this whole thing operates. And so in terms of what I'm doing with this myself, I'm very anxious to see people actually strive to get in touch with all 9 to 11 levels. Because when you do that, you get in touch with very, very high states of spiritual consciousness. So with Aquarius, by the way, the planet Uranus, it rules technology. And so you can see Aquarius has been coming in. We can see it coming in with computers and major levels of technology. Well, what went on with the space program and the secrecy with our government is our government got a hold of a whole bunch of extraterrestrial technology. And actually, a lot of the technology that they got a hold of is the basis of some of the technology that we're using today. So as people figure this out and start to understand how they're in touch with many, many more levels than they thought they were previously, the most important thing is not to just get stuck at that duality level, the dark and the light and bad and good. And that's what the struggle is about, really. You know, you bring up evangelicals. Well, they're obsessed with this is good and that's bad, you know. And then when migrant children get thrown in cages, they don't see that as Christians they might have something to do with what they should be thinking about. Or they don't care if you have a president who's had three wives and is probably going to keep on going. In other words, they're so obsessed with this black, white, bad and good level that they can't see outside of it. And that's the key now, to start to see outside of the box, which is mainly what my whole life has been devoted to.
Well, you said that, you know, they have this black and white thinking, and I know that's true. You know, and it's also very fear-based as well. I mean, I think the fact that they're so fear-based, I think that controls so much of their thinking. But I do wonder how they can look at what's going on and not think and think that it's good. You know,
from one point of view, they're getting what they want. Well, from one point of view, they're getting what they want. And what I mean by that is their basic, this is fundamentalist Christians, not so much the full range of Christians. But the real fundamentalist Christians actually believe that you need to get control of Jerusalem, rebuild the temple, and then Jesus can come flying through the sky and land in the temple. And they believe that. And so now we have a president who moved the American embassy to Jerusalem. And the Israelis have really taken basically total control of Palestine. And so they're getting what they want right now. But what they want is based on the idea that we're coming to the end of the world, everything is going to be destroyed. And, well, the rate they're going, they're destroying a lot. But that's not really what's going on. What's going on is the change of the ages. And when we make that transition from one age to the other, to the next one, people feel like they're in the middle of a cataclysm. So one of the books that I wrote about that, I wrote a book devoted just to that issue called Awakening the Planetary Mind. And that book surveys the last 20,000 years of human history and geology and climate change. And it's based on the scientific evidence of a gigantic cataclysm, actually a series of cataclysms that occurred at the end of the Pleistocene, at the end of the Ice Ages. And this is back around 9, 10, 11,000 BC. And what one of the things that's going on with us is that we are actually a multi-traumatized species. And the reason that we're a multi-traumatized species is we don't know the story. And science did everything they could to cover up the story about the real truth of what happened. But we really went through a great cataclysm on this planet only 11, 12,000 years ago. And so the reason people are so fear-based, especially fundamentalist Christians, is they haven't processed the fact that this is the past, and so they tend to project it into the future.
And I have friends that also talk about ancestral healing from the standpoint that we carry, we carry this fear or trauma that happens in our life through our DNA. So we could potentially be responding to stuff that happened to our ancestors. I don't know what you think about that, but that's kind of a relatively new concept that I've been introduced to, and it would make so much sense. You know, because maybe that explains why, so many people, just are so fearful about everything.
Right, because they really are projecting in the inner contents that aren't processed outside of themselves and into the future. That book came out in 2001, and the first title of the book was Catastrophobia, which is fear of catastrophes. Mm. And the basis of the book was that we're a multi-traumatized species because we don't have our story of the past, and so we don't understand the inner. And I agree with you about it being. I don't know if it's genetic. I don't know if it's in the consciousness bank. Could be past lives. There's a whole lot of sources for inner memory. But the point is that there's actually a really significant change going on in this field. Because science has finally caught up with the story. And at this point, in the last 15, 20 years, we're starting to get the true story of what actually happened so recently. So there's an awakening going on in that level.
I got to ask you, I'm sorry, I don't mean to take us off topic, but so what is it that happened that we don't know happened?
Well, around 11, 12,000 years ago, at the end of the last ice age, there were a series of basic cataclysms like ice melting and seas rising and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, right around 9500 BC, something came through the solar system. There's a big argument going on. A lot of people think it was a comet. I think it was fragments of a supernova, and quite a few other scientists also think that. But we literally, this planet was almost destroyed 11, 12,000 years ago. And then what happened after the series of cataclysms is we had a period of survivalism. And this period is like 9,000 BC up to about 5,000 BC, maybe 4,000 BC. And then when we get up to 4,000 or 5,000 BC, we start seeing the emergence of Egypt, and we start seeing cultures coming forth on the planet. But the period of survivalism, I think that 4,000-year period after, when we were trying to recover, the land had been devastated. People had to build dams and all kinds of things just in order to just save the actual landscape devastation. And so I especially focus on this period of survivalism because when we were in a period of survivalism, and some of this stuff is in the Bible, of fathers marrying their own daughters in order to propagate the race and things like that. And also there's stories of cannibalism. And so what I'm getting at is there's deep core inner memories of a really, really terrible period on the planet. And I think that's where the evil and the child abuse and the really dark behavior is coming from. I think it's coming from the inner minds of people who have not been able to process the inner contents of their consciousness. And then, great, Big Pharma comes along and invents drugs that create very weird things in people's minds, you know? Yeah. So I think in terms of what I've written myself, Catastrophobia, and then it became Awakening the Planetary Mind, I have seen probably the greatest growth of all in that area of human consciousness, where people are beginning to realize what actually happened. They're beginning to process the inner darkness because they can't live with it anymore. People are changing because they can't live with it anymore.
Well, and you make me think about so many people are survivalist nuts now too. That immediately came to mind. You know, you wonder if it's that's also a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
reaction to the destruction of the environment by the military and by corporations. I'm not a survivalist myself at this age. I'm not going to go there. My children are, and I think that it's a healthy reaction to what has occurred with the environment. But another thing about the environment is that, of course, they try to make it look like it's a human-caused disaster. Well, yeah, it is. It's being caused by the military and by corporate greed. Isn't it ironic?
Yeah.
You know, the real truth is who's destroying the environment? They're destroying the environment. Then they try to manipulate people to go out and buy new light bulbs.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, Barbara, I can see where all of your books are so interrelated. I mean, it's incredible. And I want to ask you about the alchemy of the nine dimensions. Do you talk about in there how people can get beyond the third and fourth dimension and start, connecting with the higher dimensions?
Yeah, it's a teaching book about that. And then what my husband Jerry and I went out and taught it for 20 years. We're still out teaching. We used to teach 2.5-day weekend workshops where we would activate all the dimensions. But at this point we're doing it's really interesting. It used to take 2.5 days to do it with people. Now we find we can activate people in an hour. In other words, people are really waking up to the point where I'm sure you notice this with people, when they hear something that's actually worthwhile and true, they really respond because people are hungry for something that's true after absorbing so much false information, you know?
Yeah. Well, I love that, and I can see so much clearer now why you went to these fiction books, because, you know, you're able to have your characters play all of this out. And I think when people see the characters play all of this out in their, you know, over the span of their lifetimes or the generations, I think they can maybe understand it, and it makes so much more sense, when they're seeing characters play it out as opposed to just reading theories in a book, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. And then each one of the characters, as you said so well, they're very, very interesting characters. One's a New York Times reporter, and another one's a painter, another one is kind of a mag. Some of the older characters are almost like magus figures, really, really brilliant, initiated people. And so I'm finding that people can understand what I'm talking about by having them talk to each other. And that's where it's so much
fun,
rather than just that one track teaching, you know. In that sense, I'm really having a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to ask you about this idea of the fallen angels, too, because you have that in your book. And, I have to admit, I didn't read your book, but I want to read them now. I want to make the time to read them. I don't know whether this is a common concept and I just am, slow on the uptake. But, you know, whenever you hear, you talk about, the devil, Satan, his name really meant the light bringer. You know, sometimes I've actually thought that the devil was the one that got the bad rap, and maybe God was really the bad guy. And is that a theme? Is that what you're talking about by the fallen angel, angle in your book?
Well, the fallen angels are coming out of the survival period, this 6 to 9,000. The Bible, of course, covers it, it's based on Sumerian and Babylonian literature, so it's going way back. And there's a book that was left out of the Bible called the Book of Enoch, and that's where all of the fallen angel information is coming from. And that was just like the Nag Hammadi scrolls and the different things that have been discovered. The Book of Enoch was resurrected, was found, and then translated, and so we have it. And basically, it's a real story of that survivalist period. The fallen angels are really reflective of that period of extreme stress on the planet, and we gotta integrate that and remember it, as far as I'm concerned. And then the devil is a much more tricky thing, because the central theme of this trilogy is, how does evil get into the world? And so then the minute you go to the devil, then you're going to fall right into that Christian concept of things. So I just basically stay away from it.
You go. We just keep interrupting
each
other.
Well, I was just
going to
say, but what
thought.
I do talk about is Yahweh and Jehovah, because he's right there on the page in the Bible, and he's a really nasty being. So I kind of go after, he's the one who's on the page, if you know what I mean, so I go after him.
Right. Well, and again, religion doesn't teach people to have much critical thinking. But, you know, even me who, I mean, I spent my early years in Catholic school, and probably until I was 12, you know, I was influenced by it. And, you know, but even I always thought, why are these people listening to this horrible God, you know? And I don't know, but this might sound crazy, but from a psychological point of view, I guess if you have a God like that, it conditions people to accept really horrible treatment. You know, it's almost as if, they were setting humanity up for domination, exploitation, the people at the top being able to rain down shit on the people at the bottom. And they become doormats, psychological doormats.
You got it, Karen. You got it in a nutshell. I was Catholic too, so that's another reason I'm going after that core issue. Because if you're going to go after Christianity, you really get into what the issues are and what's off and all. You got to go for Catholicism. So in the third book, I'm really working. Yeah.
But Barbara, you know, just from a logical point of view, you know, it amazes me that we have gone these thousands of years, and you know, and the books haven't been rejected as evil, misogyny, warmongering, and they just haven't been tossed in the dustbin. I would have thought we would have evolved more as human beings to be able to say, you know, this is not my spiritual book. Who would want that to be my spiritual book? Are humans that unevolved, you know?
I watch people wake up, and when people first wake up and realize that everything isn't this simple little fairy tale that they got handed, and I know you've watched people do this for years, they go through a lot. When somebody finally has the courage to question and to look at things clearly, people go through a healing crisis, people go through a psychological crisis. But where we are now, as we transit into Aquarius, is that we've reached that critical leap point. And that's what's so fascinating. There are people who believe the Bible, but there's probably a lot more people who are very critical at this point. Now, don't you agree?
Yeah.
They may not be reading the Bible to be critical, you know.
Barbara, I don't know. I mean, we all live in our bubbles, and, you know, the bubble that I exist in, people have rejected this a long time ago. But I don't, you know, I can't, I don't have a good barometer, so to speak, you know. Mm-hmm. When I see these, I guess, you know, when I saw these evangelical Christians come out for Trump and vote for people like Roy Moore, the child abuser, and I mean, Jeff Sessions was using the Bible to justify what they were doing, separating kids from, you know, their family at the border. I mean, these people are utterly insane. You know, I feel like we're living in an insane asylum. Huh?
Yeah, well, a cabal has gotten in, there's no question. And that's typical, again, when you're at a shift point where you get these radical extremes going on. But I do not think that they're going to win. I think they're creating a huge amount of pain and angst and difficulty. But I just don't think they're going to be around. Like, as you said, this is a small period in history. It's not, in my mind, it is a small period in history. And I think that you and I, for instance, the conversation that we're having on the phone, you know, on the phone today, you and I wouldn't have really been able to talk this freely 30 years ago. I can tell you because I've been out lecturing. I'm able to say things now that I never could have said.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I have to remember another one of my guests said that too. Patrick McCollum said that he had his house firebombed 30 or 40 years ago when he talked about the goddess publicly. You know, so I guess it just seems like things are moving so slowly. You know, the positive change isn't happening fast enough. But I guess, in context, maybe things are, happening quickly.
Well, right now we're in the middle of a real retro pullback. And by the way, I am an astrologer, and I predicted Trump would win, and I made money. And then I wouldn't let people pay me because I was so horrified. And Trump has the chart. No, but Trump has the chart of a dictator or an oligarch or some kind of power figure in the past who has returned to take control again. It's just totally crystal clear, his chart. So I studied his chart, and I looked at the transits and all, and I basically told everybody, don't be fooled here. This guy's going to win. He's a really powerful figure. And so then he swept in, you know.
Well, I have to admit, I didn't think he was going to win, and so I was surprised. But I do remember I told all my friends, look, he will be the catalyst that will be the demise of the GOP, because the GOP will overreach, you know, they will go crazy, and they certainly are. And, you know, maybe this, I had the right idea then. It's just been so hard living through it. I can't, you know, I haven't been able to keep quite such a detached view of it, you know, that, let's just ride this out. You know, it'll be the end of these, these horrible people. But as an astrologer, I mean, what can you see ahead? Do you have any ideas for, you know, what may be into the immediate future?
Well, the United States is going to be really under severe stress through the mid-2020s. And the reason for this is that the United States is on the verge of having a Pluto return. And this is connected with Trump getting in. And so the United States is really in for a great deal of difficulty and pain. And I think you know that. I think everybody knows that. And so that's really all I can say is that it's going to be a very, very stressful period. And it's how it is, you know? I mean...
Well, do you think there's any chance he will win another election? I mean,
I don't
since
think
you've
so.
Looked at his chart?
No. I haven't studied that one. I haven't studied to look to see whether he's going to get canned or not. But I think Mueller is nobody's fool. I think Mueller is like a cobra who is just gradually winding up here. And I think something really spectacular is going to happen. I really do. You know.
Well, I think it would have to be, and I just worry that even when it happens, you know, he's got his base so primed with this idea of fake news that his people won't even believe it. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe it'll be spectacular enough that, even they won't be able to deny it.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, speaking of fake news, in many, many cases, fake news is a new paradigm that people don't agree with. Like I go back through the years where I've had tomatoes thrown at me because I brought up differing ideas. And so working out this fake news situation is forcing people to do their own research and their own thinking and to come to terms with what they actually really think and feel about something. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, some
yeah.
of it is just junk. I mean, after all, we now have a collective global computer system called the Internet, and where anybody can say anything and anybody can do anything. And, of course, that's going to be abusive in the beginning. But, you know, people
yeah.
don't have to be that stupid. Like, you don't have to pay for Facebook. This is the really funny thing about human beings. You don't have to put pictures of yourself all over the place on Facebook. You don't have to do any of that stuff. And so people are,
yeah.
are making that mistake and then realizing, like, why did I do that? And then what
yeah,
happens?
Yeah, did I really need that?
More discerning, because you can't just keep buying into the latest gizmo or drug that comes that's put in front of your face. People have to be smarter than that. And that's part of this
yeah.
awakening. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, you know, I am curious. Did you happen to do a chart on Bernie Sanders by any chance?
I didn't. And I do think that I loved Bernie. I was a supporter, of course. Our whole family were Bernie Sanders supporters. And one of the really heartbreaking things that happened here is because the Democratic Party screwed him out of the election, Trump won. It's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
I think Bernie Sanders could have beaten Trump. I never thought Hillary Clinton could beat Trump. Not in a moment. Too much.
Well,
baggage.
You know, I agree with you. I think he could have, and I guess if you had done his chart, I wondered if he's going to run again, you know. But I wouldn't put it past the Democrats to screw him over again, you know, because
I think age is a factor. I think you have to put age in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Well, you know, he seems to have more energy than me. So I don't know. You know, I just can't imagine that there's a Democrat that can galvanize anyone. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's nobody out there, I think, that makes anybody excited. But I think the Democrats are stupid enough to think, well, as long as it's not Trump, they'll win. But I don't know. I'm not so sure. You know,
I don't know, and I don't. I tell you the truth, I don't pay that much attention to politics. I'm paying attention in the third book. Trump has to be a factor in the third book, because the third book covers 2018 through 2020. So you can imagine what I'm going through trying to write about this. But I don't tend
mm-hmm.
to pay that much attention to party politics, because I think it's
right.
reached the point where it's very clear that both the Democrats and Republicans are very, very corrupt. And so that's another part
yeah.
of the exposure here that's going to be happening. You know.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I think that's part of the transparency as well. I mean, it was rough being a Bernie Sanders supporter and not being a Hillary supporter. I mean, the stuff I had people tell me, you know, I was a traitor and, you know, I
yeah.
wasn't a real feminist and, you know, all of this, you know, kind of
right.
junk. And,
right.
I mean, these are still the people that, you know, can't look at the Democratic Party and see that they have been sitting there complicit in everything that's been going on. I mean, even now, you know, they're not even. I mean, with the horrible stuff that the Republicans and Trump is doing, I mean, you just don't hear from them, you know. Either that, or their microphone is turned off. It's just incredible to me that they aren't trying harder. And if they aren't trying harder, it's got to be because the way things are serves them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like it's that simple to me. But what do I know?
and Karen, I thought we were going to go an hour. Are we trying to go 2 hours?
Oh, well, you know what? I really wasn't watching the clock, Barbara. I was enjoying
yeah,
speaking to you.
And you know what I would suggest? Now that are you familiar with Matthew? This is off the air probably at this point. But are you familiar with Matthew Fox?
Oh, yeah,
and
I've interviewed him a number of times.
Original Blessing. Yeah, well, I was one of Matthew Fox's students, and then I was I went to work for Bear & Company, his publishing company, and worked there for 20 years. And so I'm really deeply steeped in the whole issue of Catholic pain, and that's really at the core of these books. And so what I'd love to do, I'm just I make a suggestion to you, if you feel like it, once you've read them, let's get back and talk again. Because,
okay.
Because I'm saying that because I think you're going to be deeply moved because of the fact that we're coming from basically exactly the same place.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, yeah, I the more we talked about it, the more I realized I was going to have to make time to read these books, and I'm sure I will enjoy them. Well, like you said, you know, our time is getting short. Is there anything,
yeah.
I know we've covered so many different levels and layers, you know, that the books bring up, but is there anything that we haven't talked about that you felt was important to mention?
I don't think so. I think you did, even though you hadn't read them, you did a really good job of touching on the essential points. I think we did a thorough job. But obviously,
okay.
If you read,
all right.
It'd be very different for you. And see what you think. By the way, the first one, Ruby Crystal, has a lot of typos in it because the proofer did a poor job. And I've actually, the paperback edition of Ruby Crystal is going to come out in perfect condition. So you may just ignore
okay.
that because that's going to go away. And then Revelations of the...
You know,
well, it was very, very frustrating, but Revelations of the Aquarian Age is perfectly written. So just...
Well, Barbara, I'm laughing, because my first book that came out, the publisher sent me 20 cases, and they were on my doorstep one day when I came home. I opened up the box and pulled one book out. It was the first time I actually saw it. And yes, there were some typos in it, but worse than that, there were some blank pages in it and some missing
God.
Pages.
Yeah.
So I am sympathetic to that sort of thing. But, you know, the weird part about it was out of the whole entire shipment, it was so weird. I didn't find that problem except in the one book that I picked up. Now, what in the world
funny.
Was that about?
Isn't that funny? Why? That hasn't happened to me yet.
I don't even know how it's possible to even happen. But I have
yeah.
to tell you, Barbara, I have so enjoyed speaking with you tonight on
Me
all
too.
Of these many topics. And, you know, maybe at some point, too, we should talk about some of your other books in depth. It might be a service to the community, you know, to talk about the Nine Dimensions book and the Pleiadian agenda, too.
And you can just get that from Manzanita, you know. You can just get that from Manzanita.
I will.
In other words,
I will.
Any books
and,
you want,
you
if you want any books, just ask for them, and she'll send them to you. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I appreciate that, and you know, and,
yeah.
and maybe you know, we'll have you on later on in the year to talk about these others because I think it's all relevant, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
it's important, and you know, I do this show as a service to the community, you know, to try to help us all awaken and uplift ourselves, and I think
mm-hmm.
these are the very sorts of topics we need to be talking about. So thank mm-hmm. you for, you know, your hard work in the world. I mean, it's obvious you've dedicated your life to this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it was fun, you know, speaking to Matthew Fox, it was fun working with him. I had a wonderful time with Matthew. That's years ago now, but that was great.
Yeah, it's been a while since he's been on the show, but I should reach out to him. I don't know what he's even
mm-hmm.
doing these days, but he was in my first anthology,
yeah.
you know, Voices of the Sacred Feminine. He was in that. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, Barbara, thank you again for being on tonight, and good luck with the third book.
It's really hard to deal with Trump. I mean, to write to have Trump. It's very hard, but I will master it. So.
I want to see what you do with him too.
Yeah, I know.
So as I'm sure we all do. Well, thank you again, Barbara, for your time. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Okay, thank you for having me. Okay, take care.
Okay,
bye.
Good night. Well, listeners, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I know we were kind of all over the place, but it just seemed to require that we connect all of those dots between her books and the different topics of conversation. You know, it's like this web. But anyway, I want to make sure I share with you a review about Joe Carson's book, Celebrate Wildness. And this review is by Dana Corby, as she wrote it in her blog called The Rantin' Raven. And here's what she said about Celebrate Wildness. She said, "When people wonder aloud how the Wicca of Southern California became so much more nature-oriented and wild than the British traditions from which it arose, the one factor they don't take into account but should is ferifaria. Ferifaria, a word Fred Adams coined from Greek roots meaning wilderness festival, is a pagan tradition unlike any other. Based on Fred's visions of the divine feminine, the sacredness of Eros, and the potential for intentional communities that truly do no harm to anything, it also draws upon themes familiar to Wiccans such as sacred landscapes, prehistoric beliefs, and the fairy faith." Well, you know, Fred intended that ferifaria should lead the world into a paradisal future in which freedom, eros, and play are the core values, where that built by human hands merges seamlessly into the wild and the fae romp among us. Celebrate Wildness is a unique, exquisite, and profound book. It created in me a sort of homesickness, a wistfulness for the idealist I was, we all were, back when we and the world and the magic were all young and fresh. Though it's a short book at only 115 art-laden pages, don't expect to read it quickly. Take your time and let it sink into your subconscious. What bobs to the surface will be wondrous. Celebrate Wildness is an oversized, hardbound book on heavy paper, and it's available for $45 from ferifaria.org, and that's spelled F-E-R-A-F-E-R-I-A.org. And I don't know about you, dear listeners, but as I read that review of Dana Corby's about Joe's book, Celebrate Wildness, I couldn't help but think about the hobbits and, you know, how their little houses just sort of fit so naturally into the landscape. And this idea that Fred had that would lead to a world of a paradisal future where freedom, eros, and play are the core values, could it be in a few generations that's actually where we go? Could Fred have been seeing the future and he was just a man before his time? I don't know. Maybe ferifaria is a guidebook. It's an interesting thought. But before I go, here's another word from Joe Carson.
Most people's psychic experiences are dreaming. And it's thought that it's the pineal gland making this chemical that does it. Now, this was the core finding that the pineal gland makes a hallucinogen. We all hallucinate, we all go into a state of consciousness that for me is the collective unconscious. This psychic state is the collective unconscious, which is that consciousness of the planet, what's called the cathonic mind, the mind of the earth, because all peoples, all races, all tribes from the past and right around the world have myths and legends which use symbols and archetypes which are identical. Identical. Every human being experiences this state of consciousness, which is the dream mind. That symbolic, archetypal, exemplified by fairy tales or the creation myths and legends of all the different peoples. The symbols of them are the same, and to me that is the consciousness of the earth speaking through us.
Well, that little snippet was from Dancing with Gaia, Joe Carson's feature-length film. In it, she interviews 15 visionaries and teachers about earth energy, sacred sexuality, and the return of the goddess Gaia. You know, Joe traveled to ancient sites all over Europe and the Mediterranean to shoot this documentary. These spiritual sites from northern Scotland to central Turkey profoundly affected the origins of Western culture. Well, if you've always wanted to see these places yourself, but you haven't, this is an opportunity to experience some of the best ones and get their story. The DVD comes packaged with a 45-page color mini book, which goes even deeper into the material. You can buy the DVD and booklet for only $20 at dancingwithgaia.com. You know, if you're a regular listener, you know that I often talk about Jo's books, Celebrate Wildness, and her documentary, Dancing with Gaia. If you're serious about your home library, I really think these are great tools, whether you're a beginner or you're a seasoned Wiccan pagan goddess advocate. You know, I think they're very insightful, and they make great gifts, and I think you want to have them in your library. Well, that about does it for me tonight. I want to thank you for tuning in and apologize for all the outside noise tonight. Was not something I could control, unfortunately. Got to keep the windows open, and it's just been a little crazy here in my part of the world. But I hope you're doing well. Summer is upon us. I hope you had a wonderful Father's Day, and I hope you have a great vacation planned for the summer or something special. And, you know, let's try real hard to focus on the positive. Let's try real hard, even when we see the ugly out there. You know that everything is happening exactly as it needs to happen, and that in the end, the world will become the place that we are striving for it to be. It's just, you know, it's just something that doesn't happen as quickly as we would like. And as I always say, remember what do you put your attention in, because what you nurture, what you focus on, that's what thrives, and what you neglect withers. So if you're focusing on the negative, you're just going to be surrounded in the negative. So make sure you get your gratitude trigger out. You know, get that piece of jewelry, make it your gratitude trigger, and, you know, use gratitude like a tool. Because when we make a conscious effort to be grateful for the positive things around us, which we so quickly forget sometimes as we focus on the negative, if we make sure that we focus on the positive, if we have gratitude for all the good we have in our life, it really just shifts our consciousness. It makes the day easier. It makes our attitude better. We just have better, more positive outcomes. And the final thing I would like to say is in about a week, I am going to be putting out my newsletter called The Essentials with Karen Tate. And if you want to make sure you get a copy of that, please make sure you email me at ancientcultures@ca.rr.com. That's ancientcultures@ca.rr.com. And that way you are sure to get on the mailing list, so that you will get once a month The Essentials with Karen Tate. Okay, good night, dear listeners. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I'll just let you hear a little bit more of my favorite Zingaya tune here, Breath of Passion.